Hello, this is episode 5 of Store and Forward, a podcast about the past and future of amateur radio. I am Kay Savitz, K6KJN, and I am the curator of the Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communication, which is a free service of the Internet Archive. And I am here with my lovely co-host.
I am Steve Stroh, NHGNJ, and I am the editor of the Zero Retries newsletter, a newsletter about technological innovation in amateur radio at www.zeroretries, all one word, .org. Good morning,
How you doing,
Kay.
Steve? Good morning.
I'm good.
Good to see
been
you.
Been another busy week here at Zero Retries headquarters and NHGNJ labs.
Tell me all about it.
Well, I did a pretty epic interview with Jeff Hochberg, W4JEW, who is the president of the APRS Foundation, which, despite having gotten started in 2022, is now just getting to the point where it's up and running as a foundation. And they have a lot of work to do yet.
It takes a while to spin these things up.
It does. I was surprised when he explained how halting the progress was over the past few years, but they are now coming out of what essentially was stealth mode. And we did a 2+ hour interview, and I had to distill it down into 2 big articles and 0 retries for that'll publish tomorrow. So that's what's been keeping me busy. Then the drumbeat of the FCC proceeding on the 902 to 928 megahertz band is still drumming in my mind, and I wake up sometimes at night thinking about it and make some notes, and so we'll talk about that in a little bit. The funniest one of the week was emergence of a lecture that Admiral U.S. Navy Rear Admiral Grace Hopper gave at the entity that was once known as No Such Agency. And I bet you got the same chuckle that I did out of them saying that they couldn't release the video because it was an obscure video format.
I'm familiar with that. So someone years ago, a couple of years ago, had done a Freedom of Information Act request. They got wind of this, that Grace Hopper had given this talk at the NSA, and they had FOIA'd it. And at first, the NSA replied with, no, we don't have that. And then they sort of came back and admitted, yeah, we have it, but it's on this weird video format off, you know, 1-inch videotape or something, and we can't do anything with it. So sorry. And then someone at the NSA had a change of heart and work collaborated with the National Archives, who does have the equipment and the expertise, and they digitized that. And then the NSA checked it out, made sure, you know, it was fine for public consumption, and put it just up on YouTube yesterday or the day before.
The story I heard was slightly different than that. I'm on a private mailing list of very, very smart, very well-connected people. And they took the NSA to task because they knew that the NSA had the equipment or had access to the equipment to, you know, replay this video into, you know, modern recording system. So they said, this excuse does not wash. So, yeah, you know, get your act together. And the NSA was apparently hounded by the IT community, the very senior IT community, you know, of people who know, you know, and could push buttons. So yeah.
Really so. I heard the story through Muckrock. Are you familiar with Muckrock?
No, I'm not.
It's an organization that their website says file, track, and share public records requests. Basically, they help people do Freedom of Information Act requests. You say what organization you want to talk to, you know what you want, and they help you file it. And then they have a database of all these FOIA things that have come in. So that's how I got the story of it through that organization. It's basically a government transparency portal organization. I like them a lot. Anyway, so that's where I got the story. I think, yeah, probably the truth is both those things that we said or somewhere in the middle. So this talk, I've watched, it's in two parts, two like 45-minute talks that they put up on YouTube. Of course, the first thing I did was archive it into Internet Archive so that there's a backup there. I put that into DLog. I watched the first half. Admiral Grace Hopper is hilarious.
Yes. I challenge anybody to watch the first 10 minutes and not want to finish the whole, both parts, to watch the entire thing. And apparently she is incredibly prescient about what she saw coming in the computing. And this was 1982, and this is the person who championed the creation of COBOL so that computers were more easily used back in the real world. Because back then, I think Fortran existed, but was Fortran, and then there was, but more much more common was programming in the individual computers, assembly language, and there were many and completely different architectures, and COBOL was, the lingua franca of, computing finally, and she did her job because there's still COBOL code running on many, many mainframes. Your airline seat is booked in, at least in part, based on COBOL code, and the IRS runs on COBOL code, so.
She tells the story of the first, computer bug, which was found in a relay in a mainframe, and she tells the story of how she like learned to visualize the difference between a picosecond and a nanosecond through lengths of wire. It's a fascinating talk. I'm really looking forward to watching the second half of that. But speaking of which, I'm gonna you mentioned assembly language. Well, one of the things I was doing while I was listening to that talk, going to talk about this pile of papers in a little while, but one of the things I was doing while I was listening to that talk was ripping apart this Green Bar computer paper that I got from Bob Cooper's files in Denver. I have two things, and basically we're going to get this scanned, and in order to do that, I had to this is, Green Bar fanfold computer paper, and I had to basically remove the papers at the perf so that it can go through the scanner better. And one of them, it was pretty clear what it was. It says, because there's comments at the top of this assembly language code. This is code for the TMS 7001 computer or chip in assembly language, and
That's a TI processor, right?
is a TI processor. Yes, good job. And this one is M/ACOM Video Cipher 2000 Descrambler. And this is the assembly language source code for a television descrambler. Which makes sense for Bob Cooper. And the other one, I had a buddy here who was in town for XOXO Festival, and he stayed with us. I didn't go to the XOXO, but got to hang out with my buddy, and he is a 6502 assembly language expert, pro. And so I said, like, hey, while you're here, I have some non-6502 code. And I have this other thing from Bob Cooper. And I said, what is this? And he spent some time and he looked at the code. And it says, written in Bob Cooper's handwriting, received January 9th, 1987, from anonymous sender, Toronto, Ontario, sent 12/30/86. Cannot identify source. And then there was this, I don't know, quarter inch thick a pile of green bar paper, and it's more assembly language, a lot of LDAs and XORs and things. And he looked at it for a while, and he said, "You figured out what it was, and it's assembly language source code for DES decryption, FIPS, FIPS 46. So yeah, we've got DES decryption, which probably was had to do with the descrambling. But anyway, this was sent from Canada to the United States in 1987. I don't think that was legal, given export and import restrictions at that time.
Well, DES, if memory serves, was Data Encryption Standard,
Right.
you know,
Yes.
and FIPS is Federal Information Processing System, I think. So,
Right.
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you just gotta love Bob, you know.
Yeah, I do. I love Bob. So anyway, that has it is ready to go. It's going to go to the scanning center, and it'll be in DLARC, you know, soon before the end of the year. So
It strikes me that you are, you know, really getting into Bob Cooper's head, you know, having lived with all this material. You know, you this these are, you know, what you got from Denver was his personal archives, you know, all of it, you know. So you're getting a deep dive into it, you know. So it'll be fascinating to hear your post-mortem in a, you know, in 6 months or so when everything has gotten through and you've touched and metadated all the stuff that gets scanned. So very
Yeah,
cool.
he's a fascinating guy. Anyway, I probably have more Bob Cooper to talk about, but anyway, I interrupted you, so please continue.
No, I so no, I just I was just fascinated with Grace. Oh, and then she grabbed me at the very first when she talked about the very first computer was built by the Navy in World War II, you know, despite the claims of a junior service, apparently, which didn't even exist at the time, you know, apparently referring to the US Air Force and their expertise in computing, putting down the marker that the Navy was there first.
Yeah, she planted the flag. She was just like, yeah, you can say what you want, but we know who was there first.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so enough about that. And, you know, again, it's not directly related to amateur radio, but it is, you know, but as far as I'm concerned, you know, as I say as frequently as I can, in the 2020s and beyond, radios are computers with antennas. And this was about, you know, the early days of computers. And, you know, you can trace the, at least in our generation, you can trace the lineage of what we do with computers now, all the way back to, you know, what she did, you know,
Absolutely.
starting in World War II.
And when there's a MOF in the relay in your computer, technically your computer has antennas.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, I mean that was a very lost, obscure term until she explained it, you know, and when you think that it was, you've I. Have you seen an open air relay telephone switch?
No.
Okay. Next time you come to Seattle, let's try to time it for being here on a Sunday when the Communications Museum is open, and you can see one of these things. So it's very easy for me to visualize that a moth did in fact get caught between the contacts of an open air relay that was part of the original, you know, Mark One, I think is was it called. But so enough about computing.
I was actually in Seattle this last weekend because my kid wanted to go to a My Little Pony conference. So that's
There is a conference for everything.
yes, there is.
Cool. So my big article in last week's Zero Retries was about a new yet another new piece of data communications hardware called the DRA Pi Zero. And in Zero Retries, you see a, you know, a zoomed in photo of it, but it doesn't give you any appreciation. But so for the folks that are watching the video, those few of you, here is a Raspberry Pi 02W. So you can see how diminutive this is.
Right, this thing is tiny. It's I don't know, I'm trying to what I could compare it to. It's smaller than a business card and about as thin.
Yes. So I could only buy the one without the header. So I need to actually dust off my soldering skills and my venerable Metcal soldering iron with the very fine tip, and probably get a magnifier to be able to put a 40-pin header on this. But here is the actual modem. Let's see, there we go. So you can
Okay.
see. And I opted for the optional screen, which just basically gives you a bit of diagnostic information. So this unit is in service to a fantastic piece of software by a guy named Craig, KM6LYW, who created DigiPi. And we'll have that in the show notes. And what the big innovation with DigiPi was is that he took some of the amateur radio software, data communication software, and split it so that the user interface was on a remote computer, the screen, the keyboard, mouse, etc. And you're not remoting into the and running it off of the, as a virtual screen. No, it's already in there as a two-part system, and you can use Wi-Fi or Bluetooth to link the screen, etc., into this unit. And but it doesn't require internet. I mean, this is completely standalone. You just happen to be using Wi-Fi or Bluetooth as a transport, inside your household. So DigiPi has graduated from basically having a Raspberry Pi soundboard, and you tacked on a transistor and a couple of other components, now to a assembled and tested unit like this, and you can now buy this off the shelf, and plug it. It can be completely plug and play, and you can be up and running very quickly with various digital modes, data modes, for amateur radio. And that was really cool. This is only one of like three different options for doing this to run the DigiPi software. And I like this particular one because it comes from a company called Masters Communications, who does a fantastic job of essentially making sure that the audio fidelity through any one of their products is high enough that you can run the highest speed data modes that you can do with a standard VHF UHF radio.
I have a question
So,
for you.
sure.
So, a few months ago, earlier this year, I learned about DigiPi through your newsletter. And we talked about it, and you were talking about going to build some cables with your daughter. And I said, would you make me a cable because I want to try it? And at that time, I bought some stuff you told me to buy. I bought a little screen, and I think I bought an audio gadget for my Raspberry Pi. I don't know. You just gave me a shopping list, and I spent $50. And about the things, and still don't have the cable, but that's okay. So does this gadget that you're talking about basically do that only in one? Does it the same functionality, or just in one more convenient unit?
So it's assembled and tested, with very little integration needed. So we would need to revisit that, but I'd be happy to work with you and get going on this. And that's an inter it's an interesting segue into another thing I wanted to mention, is that when I'm writing zero retries, I come sometimes, stumble into bigger trends that aren't readily apparent. And one of those was the M17 project, which I've done several deep dives on in Zero Retrace. Next one I'm on to is APRS messaging, the messaging function that's built into the automatic packet reporting system technology, APRS. And the reason that's becoming important now is that we have this fantastic example of how to do off-grid messaging using a technology called Meshtastic. So Meshtastic is really showing off the potential for off-grid communications via radio, and amateur radio hasn't really had a decent answer to Meshtastic, but actually the transports portion is already in, has been in place for decades now with APRS messaging, but we haven't had a good presentation for it. There's a couple of apps that you can run on your phone. One is called Droid APRS for Android, and then there's another one called APRS Fi for iOS. But both of those are kind of apps that are focused more on the viewing a map, and then the messaging is kind of off to the side. What we really need is an app, in my opinion, what we need is an app that puts messaging first and foremost. You know, doesn't bury it underneath a map application. So that's a drumbeat I'm going to start beating in zero retries, that we need such an app to really show off the potential for APRS messaging. So that's and that is yet another function of the DigiPi software. It's, you know, that messaging capability is already in there, part of the software package that Craig developed. So that's a, you know, yet another rabbit hole I'm going to be diving down, but that's what I bear. That's the beauty of zero retries. My newsletter, my rabbit holes. So I don't want to dominate the entire conversation. You've got a few items that you want to talk about.
The California Historical Radio Society sends us a lot of neat things, and they sent me a videotape, no, sorry, a 16 millimeter film. And the thing was very small, size of a deck of cards, real small, and it was labeled ARRL Emergency Communications PSA 16 millimeter color optical sound public service announcement featuring Purnell Roberts and Gregory Harrison of Trapper John MD. And we had it digitized. Talk about that in a minute.
W6ONH,
this is WA6MOS.
What's that?
Amateur radio transmitter, belongs to the cameraman.
Oh yeah? You mean he talks around the world on that?
Oh no, at home he has a high power station. This is just for emergency communication. Disasters like fire, flood, earthquake.
Oh yeah, that's right. Radio amateur operators do serve the public. I'd like to know more.
Right to this.
Let's see. The American Radio Relay League, Newington, Connecticut, 06111.
So that's it, little 30-second PSA that was probably recorded between 1979 and 1986, which was when Trapper John MD was on the air. I
For
just thought that was
the
fun.
youngsters, Trapper John was one of the characters in the long-running TV series MASH, and this was a follow-on series to MASH, where Trapper John had gotten out of the army and was now working in a hospital, if I
I
recall.
didn't know that.
Oh yeah.
I didn't know it was a spinoff. I never re I watched MASH, of course, but I don't think I ever really watched Trapper John, but so I didn't know it was a spinoff.
Yeah, Trapper John McIntyre was one of the original sidekicks of Hawkeye Pierce, and then I don't remember. He eventually went home. I don't remember what the circumstances were. I have a vague memory that. No, it was no. I'm sorry. It was another character that died in a helicopter
Who was
crash.
the fussy guy on MASH? He
Oh.
was like the Frasier, you know, the I don't know, he was like the Frasier Crane guy, the you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
That wasn't
Was
Trapper John,
played
right?
that was not Trapper John. That
Okay.
was Larry Linville was the actor. I just cannot remember his name now. Frank Burns. Yes, was the was the comedic foil, you know, the uptight comedic foil. Oh yeah.
So
Too much nostalgia.
so I got this little 16 millimeter film and trying to figure out how to get it digitized. And the Internet Archive works often with a man named Rick Prelinger. Are you familiar with the Prelinger archives?
That name rings a bell. Something to do with zero retry. Oh, think he was a new paid member of Zero
Yeah.
Recall.
Oh, that's right. He is. Yes, I saw that. He yes. So yeah, that had to have come.
Yes,
somehow.
That is the same guy in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's funny. So he had to have somehow learned about you through me, or I don't know, maybe there's some connection. So Prelinger Archives is this gentleman and his team digitize movies off of film, and they have a big archive on Internet Archive of nearly 10,000 films now. And my favorite thing is like the movies that they would show in classrooms in the 50s and 60s. You know, the educational you know, little movies that the stuff that they would you know, it's just like, you know, Tommy's body is changing, you know, as he, you know, as he goes through. So they have just hundreds and hundreds of things. You know, newsreels.
In my high school, these were called the coach films, because, you know, the football coach would, you know, have a teaching job, and most of his teaching job was to give the occasional test and show film strips.
So there's movies like, you know, the newsreels, like the Hindenburg Explodes, you know, Communism While It's Bad.
Oh, there we go. That's one of my favorites. How to use the dial
How to
phone.
Use the phone. Let's see. This is communications. We can talk about this. Bell System, Pacific Telephone and Telegraph Company. We can barely hear it.
I'm not getting any audio.
I'm not hearing it either. Sound is on.
Looks like, is this? I bet this is not a talkie.
Oh, might not be. First, obtain the correct number from the directory. And just looking through the book.
With subtitles.
Yeah. Oh, this, what year is this? 1927.
Oh, it's not a talkie.
Oh, it's not a talkie.
This is great. I love this stuff.
Yeah, it's great. Anyway, you could spend hours looking at the Prelinger archives. Anyway, so I said, hey, can you do this? This film, and he said sure, and I nailed it to him, and you know, a week later it was done, and so that's how we got the ARRL PSA digitized. It takes a whole community of people to get all the yes. various stuff digitized, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know.
Well, good that Internet Archive and DLARC is on the job. Wish our National Association for Amateur Radio was as, you know, civic minded as DLARC is, but we'll leave that discussion for another day. Yeah, I just had a couple of other, you know, quick bullet points, which look at the show notes for the details. But there was a very cool press release yesterday that was jointly from the National Radio Astronomical Observatory. I think that's it. National Radio Astronomy Observatory and Amateur Radio Digital Communications. Basically, they came up, NRAO came up with a curriculum to teach about electromagnetic spectrum using amateur radio. And the project, and it's a curriculum for STEM instruction, and it was funded by a grant from ARDC. So that's very cool. And if NRAO does not leap to mind, these are the guys that own the telescope, the array of telescopes down in New Mexico, and a similar array in Chile that was shown in the former was shown in the movie Contact. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these guys do a lot of heavy duty RF receiving, you know, radio astronomy, you know, awesome. Then, of course, the FCC is, or a company called NextNav is trying to reconfigure the beloved 902 to 928 megahertz band. Comments are due next Thursday to the FCC. So I will, that's before I'll publish the next issue of Zero Retries, or you know, next week's issue of Zero Retries. So I will be publishing no later than Tuesday a special issue of Zero Retries with my comments and suggestions on points to make in your comments if you haven't already, and how to comment, etc. So look for that. And with that, I'm out. So
great. All right. Yeah, I have plenty more to talk about, but I can save it for next time because it's never ending fun.
There's always more history to talk about.
Yeah.
And that's what's so cool about this, because I have a deep appreciation for what you are doing with DLARC, and Godspeed on that mission, because I am so informed about stuff. The more I think we have, you know, new and interesting ideas in amateur radio, the, you know, I'll do a little bit of a, you know, web search, and I'll find that somebody else has already been there. They just didn't have the technology to be able to realize it. Now we've got stupid little supercomputers like this.
Right.
You know. Oh, and this is a grand total of $15.
What? No way.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I was listening to the Grace Hopper talk, and she was talking about how fast computers were then, and how they were getting faster. I'm just like, oh, lady, you've got no idea.
I believe the little bit of history I looked up on her, she died, you know, like a less than a decade after that talk. So, so, you know, but she served the U.S. and the Navy honorably and went on to a storied career, you know, after she got out of the Navy. And she tried to get out of the Navy a couple of times, and they actually recalled her to service. So, wow, she's a fantastic lady, and, you know, just really an inspiration, you know. So, and that's, I think, the lesson that, you know, she not only battled sexism, you know, in the U.S. military and the very male-dominated computer industry, but also ageism, you know. She was sharp to the end. Mm-hmm. God bless her. So anyway, I don't want to drag this out. So we could talk for hours, but you know, that gets old. So let's wind her up.
So let's say this has been Store and Forward, your podcast about the past and future of amateur radio. I'm Kay Savitz, K6KJN. I would like you to check out the Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications. It is at archive.org/details/DLARC. And if you have something amazing in your shack or on your bookshelf that you think would benefit the being available to the entire world of amateur radio, please reach out to me k@archive.org, kay@archive.org. And if you want to donate that, and we'll get it digitized through our many, many methods and people around the world who digitize things.
And I can personally attest that Kay is very easy to work with. I have gotten hundreds of pounds of paper out of my personal archives into DLARC, and Kay makes it easy. So do reach out to Kay, especially if you have interesting stuff about data communications and amateur radio. That's the hotness. So I am Steve Stroh, N8GNJ, and I am the editor of the Zero Retries newsletter, an independent newsletter about technological innovation in amateur radio, which you can find at www.zerorietries.org. And please check that your spell corrector doesn't reset it to Zero Retires, which is a common experience, .org. And subscribing is free. There are paid subscriptions if you wish, but you certainly, and we are now at well over 2,000 subscribers, co-conspirators for data communications and amateur radio. 73K.
73.